Today is Wednesday, October the 16th. Welcome to the award-winning Personal Computer Show. I'm Hank Key. Hurricane storms Helene and Milton have destroyed whole communities in the southeastern United States. You can make a difference. Help people affected by Hurricanes Helene and Milton by donating to the American Red Cross. Your donations will help deliver essential services and supplies to those in need. Big Tech has been collecting and aggregating your personal data. Do you know how big tech companies and our government are using your personal data? We have been bringing computer news, hardware and software reviews, guest interviews, and news of user group meetings for the past 40-plus years. The Personal Computer Show is a 3-time winner of the prestigious National Computer Press Awards. Our only advocacies are consumerism and the First Amendment. I welcome you, the listeners, to provide feedback as to what you want to hear. Address your suggestions to Hank at pcradioshow.org. Our website is pcradioshow.org. We are heard each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network, PRN.live. That's PRN.live, streaming on the Internet. Podcasts of the program is available on PRN.live on the Internet. You can leave us a message with your questions or comment at hank@pcradioshow.org. Jeffrey Hinton and John Hopfield of Artificial Intelligence receives the Nobel Prize. John Hopfield and Jeffrey Hinton won the Nobel Prize in 2024. Their contributions have laid the foundations for machine learning in neural networks. The achievement marks the shift of artificial intelligence from tech to mainstream media. We are witnessing a shift in the tech world with the inception of artificial intelligence. It has become quite a buzzword, but it also has proven a highly useful tech innovation. Now that machine learning and artificial neural networks are evolving, artificial intelligence has appealed to the scientific community. More specifically, Jeffrey E. Hinton and John Hopfield are awarded for their foundational discoveries and inventions, which enabled machine learning with artificial neural networks. This is a great achievement, not just for the scientists, but also for the tech community. The Nobel Prize marks the recognition of machine learning as a vital discovery. It might not just be a buzzword or hype-generating term anymore. The two scientists have received the Nobel Prize for laying the foundation for what's possible with today's machine learning capabilities. John Hopfield used associative memory to store and reconstruct images and other data. Jeffrey Hinton created a method to find properties in data autonomously. These help identify specific features and elements of the pictures, thus giving birth to the new age machine learning capabilities. The announcement was made by the Royal Swedish Academy of Sciences at a press conference in Stockholm, Sweden. American professor John Hopfield, 91, is a professor at Princeton University in the United States, and Professor Hinton, 76, is a professor at the University of Toronto in Canada. Machine learning is key to artificial intelligence as it develops how a computer can train itself to generate information. It drives a vast range of technology that we use today, from how we search the Internet to editing photographs on our phones. I had no idea this would happen. I'm very surprised, said Professor Hinton, speaking on the phone to the Academy minutes after the announcement. He said he was in a hotel with bad internet in California and thought he might need to cancel the rest of his day's plans. The Academy listed some of the crucial applications of the two scientists' work, including improving climate modeling, development of solar cells, and analysis of medical images. Jeffrey Hinton said that he uses ChatGPT-4. Professor Hinton's pioneering research on neural networks paved the way for current AI systems like ChatGPT. In artificial intelligence, neural networks are systems that are similar to the human brain in the way they learn and process information. They also enable AIs to learn from experience, as a person would. This is called deep learning. Professor Hinton said his work on artificial neural networks was revolutionary. It's going to be like the Industrial Revolution, but instead of our physical capabilities, it's going to exceed our intellectual capabilities, he said. But he said he also had concerns about the future. He was asked if he regretted his life's work, as he told journalists last year. In reply, he said he would do the same work again. But I worry that the overall consequence of this might be systems that are more intelligent than us might eventually take control. He also said he uses the AI chatbot ChatGPT-4 for many things now, but with the knowledge that it does not always get the answer right. Professor John Hopfield invented a network that can save and recreate patterns. It uses physics that describes a material's characteristics due to atomic spin, in a similar way to how the brain tries to recall words by using associated but incomplete words. Professor Hopfield developed a network that can use incomplete patterns to find the most similar. The Nobel Prize Committee said the two scientists' work has become part of our daily lives, including in facial recognition and language translation. The winners share a prize worth $1,059,473. However, these achievements aren't the only ones Hinton is known for. He has worked with Google Brain and taught at the University of Toronto. Ilya Sutskever, the co-founder and former chief scientist of OpenAI, was a student of Jeffrey Hinton. Similarly, Yan Li Kun, vice president and chief AI scientist at Meta, is Hinton's student. Jeffrey Hinton has always been dubbed the godfather of AI. However, he also warned us about various misinformation and job market disruptions that AI might bring about. As we can see, he wasn't off with the existential threat that came with true digital intelligence. Jeffrey Hinton, along with his aforementioned students, contributed to the development of the neural network, which laid the foundation for modern AI and other platforms like ChatGPT. The scientists decided to step down from Google in 2023 to raise more awareness about the threats of AI. However, the scientific community finally recognized his contributions along with John Hopfield. This comes with a clear impact that AI is making in the scientific field, daily life, and the tech world. Moreover, it has assisted in the development of quantum computers. While quantum computing is currently at the adolescent stage, we may get some insight into the technology. Who knows? Unexplored and complex technologies like quantum computing might be next in line for the Nobel Prize after machine learning and AI. Artificial intelligence chatbots may soon be more intelligent than us. AI created drug to be used on humans for the first time. When Professor Hinton resigned from Google last year, he told the BBC some of the dangers of AI chatbots were quite scary. He also said at the time that his age had played into his decision to leave the tech giant. Earlier this year, in an interview with BBC Newsnight, he said the UK government will have to establish a universal basic income to deal with the impact of AI on inequality, as he was very worried about AI taking lots of mundane jobs. He added that while AI would increase productivity and wealth, the money would go to the rich and not the people whose jobs get lost, and that's going to be very bad for society. In the same interview, he said developments over the last year showed governments were unwilling to rein in military use of AI, while the competition to develop products rapidly meant there was a risk tech companies wouldn't put enough effort into safety. Professor Hinton said, "My guess is in between 5 and 20 years from now, there's a probability that we'll have to confront the problem of AI trying to take over." Social media is becoming synonymous with cesspool for children. The term social media is beginning to be synonymous with cesspool for children, according to a Hinden Research report on Roblox, an online kids gaming service, which painted a picture of a site you wouldn't want your worst enemy to visit, let alone your children. It came the same day as attorneys general from a dozen states sued TikTok, alleging that the company designed the app to be addictive to kids. A week ago, a court unsealed a lawsuit against Snap filed by the New Mexico Attorney General, which showed that Snap staffers knew that a staggering volume of child sexual abuse material was circulating on Snapchat. And just 3 weeks ago, Meta Platforms Instagram made accounts for users under 16 private by default. After a constant barrage of publicity about teens suffering damage from harmful material that they encountered on the app. In short, every social media app seems to have an issue with content no parent wants their kids to see. This account in the last weeks, as reported in New Yorker, provides a good summary of the dangers. Today's revelations may be the most alarming. However, given that Roblox is heavily skewed towards children, 42% of Roblox daily activity users were under 13 last year. The company has said in securities filings, and yet Hindenburg Research said it easily found a group of thousands of Roblox members openly trading child pornography and soliciting sexual acts from minors. It also cited games available on Roblox that are horrifying that Roblox, for its part, said it totally rejects the claims made by Hindenburg, adding that it has a robust set of proactive and preventative safety measures designed to catch and prevent malicious or harmful activity on our platform. What's to be done about these social media issues generally? Parents and schools need to do what they can to keep kids away from phones and the internet. But that's much easier said than done. Tech companies really have to do whatever they can to keep this garbage off their platforms. It's difficult. But given the growing number of lawsuits and regulations aimed at addressing this issue, the companies are going to be squeezed eventually if they don't act. It's not crazy to imagine that failure to act may end up becoming social media's long-running litigation in years to come, as the damage done to kids leads to huge legal settlements against the companies. After years of cashing in on social media's popularity, tech companies may find the bill is coming due. The Department of Justice reveals its plans for breaking up Google's search monopoly. The agency said in a court filing that it is considering remedies ranging from forcing Google to split off parts of its business to requiring the company to share key data and details about its search algorithms with competitors. In August, a federal court found that Google, led by CEO Sundar Pichai, was operating an illegal monopoly over internet search. The Department of Justice has laid out its broad strokes plan for ending Google's monopoly over internet search after winning its antitrust case against the company in August. The sweeping changes could end Google's position as the default search engine on billions of devices and require the company to share key information about its search algorithms with competitors. The regulators' proposals laid out in a filing with the D.C. federal court where the antitrust case was heard are aimed not only at rectifying Google's past anti-competitive practices, but also at preventing it from unfairly dominating emerging technologies, particularly internet searches enabled by generative AI tools. Any changes to Google's business model will take time, if they happen at all. The Department of Justice's filing indicates the general categories of remedies it might seek, but the agency still has significant work to be done before it puts forward a detailed plan for the court to rule on. Google, meanwhile, has said it will appeal the court's decision. Google described the Department of Justice proposal as radical and said government overreach in a fast-moving industry may have negative unintended consequences for American innovation and America's consumers. The first step necessary to unwind Google's illegal monopoly, according to the Department of Justice, will likely be to limit or end the company's use of contracts and unfair revenue-sharing agreements that have enshrined Google as a pre-installed search engine on all Android devices and the Chrome browser. It could potentially also include forcing Google's parent company, Alphabet, to split off the Android and Chrome divisions of its business. Google's search tools are powered by a huge amount of data its web crawlers have indexed and the ranking algorithms that prioritize which result users see first. To level the playing field for competitors, the Department of Justice said it might try to make the company share the indexes, search results, underlying ranking signals, and models used for Google search, including AI-powered search. Google's ability to leverage its monopoly power to feed artificial intelligence features is an emerging barrier to competition and risk further entrenching Google's dominance, the Department of Justice wrote, adding that potential remedies could include prohibiting the company from signing contracts with web publishers that deny rival search engines access to their sites and forcing Google to allow publishers to opt out of having their content scraped and used to generate AI summaries at the top of search results. The final category of remedies the Department of Justice proposed would aim to spread the wealth generated by advertisements attached to internet searches by making it easier for smaller competitors to enter the markets without being crushed by Google's economy of scale and by requiring Google to be more transparent with advertisers in its ad auctions. The case stems from a lawsuit first filed against Google in 2020 that alleged the company had illegal dominance in online search. Basing their case mostly on the contracts between Google and Apple's Safari and Mozilla's Firefox worth billions, Google has said it will appeal the ruling. The Department of Justice said in the filing to the U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia that fully remedying harms requires not only ending Google's control of distribution, but also ensuring Google cannot control the distribution of tomorrow. Prosecutors are considering behavioral and structural remedies that would prevent Google from using products such as Chrome, Play, and Android to advantage Google Search and Google Search-related products and features, including emerging search access points and features such as artificial intelligence over rivals or new entrants. Leanne Mulholland, Google's Vice President of Global Affairs, wrote in a blog post that the company was concerned that the Department of Justice is already signaling the request that goes far beyond the specific legal issues in this case. Mulholland said the case was about a set of search distribution contracts. Rather than focus on that, the government seems to be pursuing a sweeping agenda that will impact numerous industries and products with significant unintended consequences for consumers, businesses, and American competitiveness, Mulholland added. Splitting off Chrome or Android would break them and many other things. Breaking them off would change their business models, raise the cost of devices, and undermine Android and Google Play in their robust competition with Apple's iPhone and App Store. Google's Chromebook strategy shifts as parallels for Chrome OS faces sunset. But after every sunset is a sunrise. Google might take a new approach with virtual app delivery. Report says that Parallels for Chrome OS, a solution that brought virtual Windows desktops to Chromebooks, may be nearing its end. According to Chrome Unboxed, customers are expected to receive official word about the shutdown before the year's end. The collaboration between Google and Parallels, which began in 2020, started to provide Windows functionality on Chrome OS devices. However, the project has seen very little development in recent months, and with the last significant update occurring around 18 months ago. But it might not be such bad news for those users reliant on Windows applications. Earlier this year, Google acquired Cameo, that's Cameyo, a company that specializes in virtual app delivery, or they call it VAD. This might be Google's next strategy for running Windows apps on Chromebooks. Cameo's approach differs in that it focuses on individual apps rather than providing a full virtual desktop like Parallels. In theory, this lets users run Windows software as if it were native to Chrome OS and could be a smoother experience. Mario Zuniga, the IT director of Sanmina, highlighted the security benefits of this integration, stating that this integration and the fact that Cameo has a zero-trust security model baked in at its core adds additional layers of security so that we can confidently enable our employees to work from anywhere on any device with the utmost security, as reported by Windows Central. An issue for daily Chrome OS users might be that Parallels for Chrome OS and Cameo's VAD solution target enterprise users. Whether similar solutions will appear for consumers remains to be seen. The change in plan shows how Google is doing things differently. This time, instead of just killing a service without giving another option, which is so common that the Killed by Google on X has more than 60,000 followers, Google is introducing a new solution that could work better and replace Parallels. Presenting the IT Pro Series with Benjamin Rockwell.
This is Benjamin Rockwell, and now it's time to get down to business. This is where we talk about computers, the workplace. We talk about a lot of the different things that are going on with IT professionals. Now, I want to spend a moment. I want to let you in on something that is sometimes thought of as a secret. Maybe you know this, maybe you don't. Most people, the only time you deal with a nerd is actually in the workplace. That's how this all fits in. And IT professionals, we're actually interested in helping you. Most of us are very, very interested in being as helpful as we can. And I want to give you kind of a parallel analogy. This might help with you understanding what we're dealing with along the way. I want you to picture yourself on a road trip, and you're not traveling alone. You have your trusty mechanic along. It's actually the IT pro. But here's the thing. That IT pro can't read your mind, and you are the one with a map. So let's break this all down. There are three different things that I really need to impress upon you. The first off is we don't know your journey. And that's okay. We don't know everything either. We're not wizards with magic wands that can instantly solve all of your tech problems. We don't know all of the different roadblocks or bumps, hiccups, whatever you want to call, that you have encountered along the way. You have to tell us this. You have to share all of your journey that is related to what's going on here. And we can solve that. But we can solve more things if you tell us other parts. And we're going to ask you questions. And we don't always ask questions the best way. Not all of us nerds are as gifted as to being able to have a wonderfully long conversation about whatever it is that is going on. We don't always ask the right questions. So we're sitting there. And we're navigating blindfolded while you have the map. So I need you to help us out. I need you to share your journey. And that journey is going to include frustrations. As long as you tell us, hey, this isn't your fault. I'm asking for your help to come to grips with whatever problem it is and for us to tackle this. Next up, I need you to guide the IT professional through all of the potholes that you've come across on your tech journey. You've been on your tech journey for a while. You are the hero of your own story. But the bit players in this, the IT pros, they don't know everything that's going along here. So you've maybe hit a few dead ends along the way and maybe detours that threw you off course. I need you to share those details with us. The more you tell us, the better we can pave that smooth road ahead. That means you need to take notes when things go wrong. You need to jot it down wherever you're going to place this and just have those on hand. Look, you can, if I roll in and I'm looking at your computer and you give me a list of these things, I'm going to look at item number one, number four, number seven, number 12, and I'm going to say, okay, these, the 1, 4, and 7, and 12, those four are all related. That means you have this problem right here. I may not be able to deal with 2, 3, 5, 6, and the rest at that immediate moment, but I'm eager to help fix this. So you need to tell me what the noises are that are going on in your car. You need to say it's coming from the front right wheel well. You need to say it happens whenever I hit the brakes, and we start piecing these all together, just like you're talking to, yes, the mechanic. So this means it's collaboration. We need that collaboration. We need you to work with us. This is always a two-way street. We're not going to read your minds. We are your tech sidekicks. We're not superheroes. But when the two of us, you and I, team up, we're going to get pretty close to this. You need to give us all of the info on what's gone wrong. We can then swoop in with the right tools, the right solutions, and we can get this all taken care of. It's kind of like fixing a flat tire. You need to tell us which tire you're having problems with before we can patch it up. You need to tell us what are the different issues that you're having. If you only have problems with Outlook, look, we're going to tackle Outlook. We're going to figure it out. Maybe it's uninstalling and reinstalling Outlook. Maybe it's adjusting a few settings, whatever it is. If it's always in Outlook, hey, we've got some clues right there. Help us with this entire troubleshooting scenario, with getting to the bottom of whatever the problem is for you. Don't say, oh, the computer doesn't work. The computer is just, it's horrible. I hate computers. Well, do you hate computers or do you hate all of the errors that you're getting whenever you're dealing with Outlook? And we need to understand this. Look, you're the driver. The IT professionals, we're the mechanics. We can't fix what we don't know is broken, but the more clues you can give us as to the root problem, whatever you're dealing with, the more information that you can provide us, that's when the real fix, the real solution comes to mind. That's all I'm asking for. Little old me, Benjamin Rockwell. Back to you, Hank.
Thank you, Benjamin. What has the impact of work from home been on business districts? The shift towards remote work has significantly affected business districts, particularly in urban areas. Here are some of the key impacts. The hollowing out of business districts. One of the most notable effects of widespread work from home policies is the hollowing out of central business districts. As employees work from home, the demand for office space decreases, leading to higher vacancy rates in commercial real estate. This trend can result in a decline in the vibrancy and economic activity that typically characterizes these areas. And then there's a decline in local businesses. Business districts often rely on the foot traffic generated by office workers. With fewer employees commuting to work, local businesses such as cafes, restaurants and retail shops experience a significant drop in customers. This declined and threatened the viability of these businesses, leading to closures and reduced economic diversity in urban centers. And there are changes in the real estate dynamics. The demand for office space has shifted, with many companies reconsidering their real estate needs. This can lead to a reduction in commercial property values and potential oversupply of office space as businesses adapt to hybrid or fully remote models. The traditional office landscape may need to be reimagined. Then there's also the impact on urban planning and development. The changes brought about by work from home may prompt city planners and developers to rethink the design and function of business districts. There may be a shift towards creating more mixed-use spaces that accommodate residential, commercial, and recreational needs, reflecting the changed priorities of urban living. Economic disparities now exist. The shift to remote work can exacerbate economic inequalities. Areas that were previously thriving due to their proximity to business districts may see a decline in economic activity, while suburban and rural areas may experience growth as people relocate for more space and affordability. This shift can lead to a reallocation of resources and investment away from traditional urban centers. The impact of work from home on business districts is multifaceted, leading to challenges such as reduced foot traffic, declining local businesses, changes in real estate dynamics, and shifts in urban planning. As remote work continues to evolve, these areas will need to adapt to the new economic landscape. There are reasons why employers want employees to return to the office. Employers have various motivations for implementing return-to-office policies, and some of the key reasons are as follows. Increased control over employees. Many employers believe that return-to-office allows for greater oversight and control of their workforce. A significant portion of employees perceive that companies are mandating return-to-office to monitor productivity and ensure compliance with company policies. This desire for control can stem from concerns about accountability and performance when employees are working remotely. There's also the issue of enhanced collaboration and innovation. Employers often argue that in-person work fosters better collaboration and innovation. The spontaneous interactions that occur in an office setting can lead to creative problem-solving and quicker decision-making, which may be harder to achieve in a remote environment. Returning to the office can help reinforce a company's culture and values. Employers see the office as a space where employees can engage in team-building activities and develop relationships that contribute to a cohesive work environment. Some employers have expressed concerns about productivity levels in remote work settings. They may believe that being physically present in the office can help ensure that employees remain focused and engaged in their task. Return-to-office policies can also be a strategy to manage employee turnover. By requiring employees to return to the office, companies may hope to identify those who are less committed to the organization, potentially leading to a natural reduction in workforce size without formal layoffs. And there is the issue of facilitating training and development. In-person work can provide better opportunities for training and mentorship. New employees in particular may benefit from direct guidance and support from colleagues and supervisors, which can be more challenging to replicate in a remote environment. Employers' motivation for return-to-office policies often revolve around control, collaboration, culture, performance management, turnover, and training. Each organization may weigh these factors differently based on its unique circumstances and workforce dynamics. The impact of the hybrid work model, balancing work and life. Hybrid work arrangements have led to a range of outcomes for companies that have embraced this model. Some results are positive, like increased productivity, and others are more challenging, such as weakened team dynamics. For some, the advantages of increased flexibility and autonomy are clear, while others struggle to maintain a strong company culture. While hybrid schedules are in demand, leaders must take care to ensure adequate exposure to others on the team to build relationships and teamwork. Opportunities to interact with senior leaders and provide development to hybrid team members are critical to ensuring growth and bench planning. All too often, hybrid team members are working in isolation with little exposure to teams and leadership. Flexible hybrid schedules allow employees to work longer when they otherwise would have taken the entire day off or even part of the day. This not only allows work to continue, but it also alleviates the stress for the employee. This is especially true in our customer-facing roles where coverage is essential. This may not be possible if interactions with customers are in person. The positive impacts include increased employee satisfaction and retention, an expanded talent pool, and better work-life balance. However, negative impacts include collaboration, challenges, cultural shifts, and potential inequity. The key is to implement hybrid work thoughtfully. Companies should also regularly assess the impact on productivity, collaboration, and employee satisfaction, adjusting the approach as needed. Research shows hybrid work can lead to higher levels of workplace satisfaction and engagement. Employees with a voice in deciding where they work tend to enjoy higher productivity and better relationships with their managers. However, hybrid work presents new challenges with internal communication. Effective communication strategies, including tools and training for managers, are key to success. The success of a hybrid work model often depends on how well it is implemented and managed. Companies that thoughtfully design their hybrid policies, invest in necessary technology, and train managers to lead remote teams effectively are more likely to see positive results. Those who rush into hybrid models without adequate preparation may struggle to realize the potential benefits. Hybrid work schedules can ease stress for both employees and employers. Employees enjoy the flexibility to manage their work and personal lives, which helps reduce burnout. Meanwhile, employers benefit from fewer absences and higher productivity since happy, less stressed employees are more engaged. This balance creates a healthier, more productive work environment for everyone. Hybrid work offers the flexibility that many employees now expect, which can be a competitive advantage in attracting and retaining top talent. However, if a company relies heavily on one person, collaboration, and an in-office culture without the infrastructure to support distributed teams, hybrid schedules may hinder an organization's effectiveness. The impact of hybrid work is mixed because of the dependencies of the business model and leadership buy-in. Companies should adopt a hybrid policy because it is a recruitment and retention tool for flexibility. It is important to provide clear expectations for work hours, both remote and on-site, have communication transparency, and foster a culture of regular one-on-one to optimize success. The impact hybrid work schedules have had on business is twofold. First, beliefs about what a remote workforce can do were shattered as the world moved to years of fully remote work. Second, the isolation that followed also reminded us of the value of in-person interactions. Given all that, companies should consider adopting a hybrid work schedule because it really is the best of both worlds. It finally happened. Intel killed hyper-threading on its desktop CPUs. The new Arrow Lake range, called Core Ultra 200S, ditches the simultaneous multi-threading with the acronym SMT feature that Intel has held onto for more than a decade. And according to Intel, it doesn't need the extra threads to still deliver a generational performance improvement, even up against the best processors. Intel says a new range can deliver an 8% performance improvement in single-threaded workloads over the previous generation and a 4% uplift compared to the Ryzen 9 9950X. Those are pretty small margins, but the real impressive stuff comes in multi-threaded performance. in multi-thread performance, Intel says its new Core Ultra 9 285K delivers 15% higher performance than the last-gen Core i9 14900K and 13% higher performance than AMD's new Ryzen 9 9950X. That may not sound huge, but it is. Intel is delivering high performance with 24 threads than AMD can deliver with 32, at least according to Intel's own numbers. Moreover, Intel says it can deliver this performance while cutting power demands by up to 58%. Arrow Lake is a big departure for Intel, but we already know quite a bit about how the processors work. They use the same SkyMont and Lion Cove designs as Intel's new Lunar Lake laptop CPUs, which was in the ZenBook S14. The architecture is the same, but Intel is bumping the core counts, feeding more power to them, and squeezing out higher clock speeds, up to 5.7 GHz on the Core Ultra 9 285K. Breaking out to more productivity apps, Intel says the Core Ultra 9 285K will trade blows with the Ryzen 9 9950X with just fewer threads. Video workflows will massively benefit from the new chips, however, showing up to a 7.3 times improvement, according to Intel. That's particularly due to support for Sony's new 4K and 8K XAVC codecs. Intel says Arrow Lake chips are the first desktop CPUs to support the new codec. Even a year ago, it was unthinkable that Intel would abandon the SPT feature that it spearheaded, but here we are. And based on Intel's numbers, killing hyperthreading might have been the best choice, at least for productivity apps. We don't know for sure until the processors arrive at the end of this month. Intel lists a best processor is about to expand with the upcoming launch of Arrow Lake S, also referred to as Intel Core Ultra 200 series for desktops. But what comes next is less certain, and even more so now. According to a post on the Chip Hell forums, Intel may have decided to cancel the Arrow Lake S refresh, which is the Intel Core Ultra 300 series, presumably that was reportedly slated for sometime next year as a follow-up to this year's initial launch. On the upside, the code name for an upcoming desktop CPU generation was also leaked. The rumored Arrow Lake S refresh was never confirmed, but there have been many whispers about it from various leakers, much like the Raptor Lake refresh. It was never meant to be a groundbreaking update. The neural processing unit, NPU, was the main thing that was going to be updated. Presenting Technology Chatter with Benjamin Rockwell and Marty Winston.
Marty Winston joins me now, and Marty, you and I have chatted a little bit about your Google phone. How long have you had it actually now?
Oh, just a couple of weeks.
Okay.
My wife needed a new phone because it was starting to do bad things. She had a Samsung phone.
Okay.
And there was some malware in there that got in through Samsung's homepage manager.
That's kind of an ugly thing. Yes.
Yeah. So I said, no, you're going to get Google phones from now on. And she got a Pixel 8a.
Okay.
And she hated it at first, and then she likes it. So, you know, it's like anything else that changes.
People fear change. Yeah. Indeed.
And when I found out that I could get the Pixel 9 Pro XL for trade-in, just almost no money at all, no change.
Sure,
my old one was paid off. I thought, okay, more memory, more sensitive modems for more bars and more places. Let's see, what else does it have?
What's faster, the screen size?
Better cameras. It's about the same.
Is it up in the phablet or? No, it's okay. Yeah, it's.
Yeah,
he's showing me
on the radio. Can you see it on your radio? Oh. I told you that video
so,
link.
So it's about a 7-inch screen. So it's yeah, not in the phablet range, but it's good for.
It's almost for the same people. Size as my old Pixel 6 Pro.
Okay, all right.
And I didn't know I was getting an XO. I thought I was just getting the Pro, but mm-hmm. as it turns out, T-Mobile didn't carry the Pro. So when I asked for a Pro, I got an XL.
Okay.
And they adjusted my rate as a result. So
yeah,
two months now, I haven't had to pay a bill because I had a credit rolling forward. Kind of like that. Anyway, yeah. As performance goes, it's a very interesting phone.
Mm-hmm.
The photography is... Why bother with cameras anymore?
Yeah, really.
moving apps over took almost no time, had very few issues. Updates,
sure.
You know.
Sure, yeah.
You do get more bars. It does have a bunch of new features you would expect, but nothing that is worth changing a phone for. It's just like you buy a cupcake. Gosh, it comes with frosting. They can charge faster, too.
Sure.
Kind of interesting. Although I have to say, this thing will run for hours and I'll look and it'll still be 100%.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
They found a way to either conserve on energy or lie about what's left.
I am starting to wonder if perhaps, and I noticed this with my Apple phone, for quite a while, it would stay at 100% far longer than I would have thought. And then it would start to drop at a predictable pace. I'm wondering if, and I'm saying this off the cuff with no knowledge of anything of what they might be doing, but they might
be. Well, I can anticipate what you're going to say.
Are they using bigger batteries and just the number, you know?
Well, they might be, but they might have set their understanding of its charge. Mm-hmm. So that the range between 100 and 110% all counts as 100.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was thinking, yeah.
So we don't know. You guys want to know for sure. Here's what you do. Wonder.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a hands-on kind of geek. It's fine.
Yeah.
I also got a rock form case for this.
Rock form. Very nice.
Yeah. By the way, people, it's ROKFORM. I got their rugged Pixel 9 Pro XL phone case. This one has some extra features in it, but it also has one small annoyance that I have to mention.
Okay.
Wireless charging doesn't make it through.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
Now, I brought it up to Rockform. I said, guys, you know, I try only to tell the truth, and if it's something I'm doing, I want to take the blame for it. But
sure.
They said, no, a lot of cases these days, and this is why I think it's worth mentioning, a lot of cases have that issue. It's not that the phones are that different. It's not that the cases are necessarily that different. It's not that the chargers are that different. But it's just different enough that you'll get about 3 seconds of charge before it decides there isn't enough there and turn it off.
Yeah. There's you get either the thin cases, which don't protect well.
Right.
Or you wind up with something like this where it's thick enough and rock form. I actually went to their site once. You know who they're affiliated with? JT Racing, Motorcycle Racing.
Wow.
So I know a lot of motorcyclists use these Rockform cases because they've got all kinds of mounts to put onto. And actually a lot of people do these days. But Rockform really started that off, I think. Yeah.
I want to point out.
At least my awareness. Yes, go ahead.
It's a little hard to see with the case on, but there's this kind of lens snorkel thing that comes out from the back a bit
on
this Google phone. And underneath, to balance it out, the case has a feature there that keeps it even. You don't want to be resting on a corner of an optical thing.
Sure.
Well, I believe it's those features that cause that little bit of distancing.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, then any other phone that has a sticky out lens, to use a technical term, might find the same thing happening.
Yeah. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That's Marty Winston. Back to you, Hank.
Thank you, Benjamin. And thank you, Marty. Public service announcements. computer club meetings in the New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut tri-state region. Log on to the club website for more information on remote meeting ID. The Brookdale Computer Users Group has a meeting Thursday, October the 24th. Meeting time is 6:45 p.m. Online virtual meeting. Website is bcug.com. The Amateur Computer Group of New Jersey has a meeting on Friday, November the 1st. Meeting time is 8 p.m. Online virtual meeting via Jitsi. Website is acgnj.org. TED Ed Connect meets Tuesday, November the 5th. Meeting time is 7 p.m. and it's Zoom only because the library is unavailable for Election Day. Online virtual meeting via Zoom. The website is wpcug.org. Kingsbyte Computer Club meets Tuesday, November the 5th. Meeting time is 7 p.m. Park Plaza Restaurant, 220 Cadman Plaza West in Brooklyn, and the number to confirm is 347-278-7320. Long Island Macintosh Users Group meets Friday, November the 8th. Meeting time is 7 p.m. Online virtual meeting via Zoom. Website is limac.org. The New York Amateur Computer Club meets Thursday, November the 14th. Meeting time is 7 p.m. Online virtual meeting via Zoom. And the website is nyacc.org. Our website is pcradio.org. We are heard each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on PRN, live streaming on the Internet. Podcasts of the program is available on prn.live on the Internet. If you have any questions for us, just send us an email addressed to hank@pcradioshow.org. In the meantime, stay in touch and remember to do regular backups. I'm Hank Key, and on behalf of Michael Horowitz, Benjamin Rockwell, and Marty Winston, we thank you for listening. Stay safe and healthy until we meet again, same time, same station, next week.